From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for September 24th, 2017, the first Sunday of fall. It's time for our weekly look at politics from City Hall to the State House and to Washington, D.C. Grab the Sunday paper, go get that cup of coffee. We'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. And yeah, the first Sunday of fall, I believe the high is estimated to be 92 today.
Well, you're close, mid-80s.
Oh, we keep going.
I couldn't believe this. We broke record temperatures 3 days in a row.
Well, welcome to August.
Yeah.
You know, the August we didn't get. Wow.
We have it now.
Yeah, we sure do. And
we're talking preseason hockey already.
Yes, exactly. I'm really wondering if they're having any trouble over at the United Center keeping the ice going.
They are.
Are they? You know that.
A little bit, yeah. They had a problem on Thursday during the intermission between second and third. It was too soupy.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I'm not surprised.
Well, this happens in Florida when the Florida teams, like when Tampa Bay went to the Cup Final against
right.
the Hawks in 15. It's the middle of June in Florida.
And it's swampy
you
there.
You can only imagine what that's like.
Well, it's time to get the newsroom Zamboni out of storage.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, we never did get the slip and slide out this year.
But we didn't need it till now.
Really need it until
I thought you
now.
Lost the key, Schwani, to the Zamboni. You couldn't find it.
Have to call a locksmith.
Oh, man. But yesterday, 95.
I know.
And
unbelievable.
I'm betting you it's going to be 92 today. I'm just betting you.
Well, you know, we get the predictions for the temperatures. In the last, I think, two Sundays, we've easily hit the predicted high and gone above it.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right. We could do 90 again today.
Well, that and knowing I'll be outside all day
at
Chicago Gourmet.
This is your festival.
This is
the one for you.
It's a learning experience.
You know? Of course it is.
Watch the various chefs preparing things. It's a great experience.
I had the grill out earlier.
Did you?
This week, yep.
What'd you make?
Chicken.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's very simple. Just see how long I can cook it before it burns. and then make the best of it.
How do you measure the doneness then? By when it goes to black? Or what?
Something like that, yes, right.
I got this neat little temperature probe for the grill that's hooked up by Bluetooth to your phone.
Oh, is it hooked up to Bluetooth?
Yes. And it gives you like you set the, you know, temperature, desired temperature, and it will have an alarm when it's, you know, getting ready to be taken off.
And then it beeps at you.
Yes. And it also gives you a graph showing you how the temperature rise is.
Wow. And all this on your phone?
All on your phone.
And amazing.
And it really works, actually. I was experimenting with that with the very thick cut of pork and was excellent.
It worked.
Yep. And you can set your own temperature for it so you don't have to use the what's always the recommended temperature kind of thing.
When you said you were talking about a temperature for the grill, you know, you've seen these. They've had them out for years, the thermometers, actually.
Yes, they're called thermometers.
Well, I know, but you stick them in the meat or
right.
on the grill itself. I've got a Weber that has a one temperature gauge at the top of the grill.
Right.
So, you know.
And you pull it out. Well, then the Weber used to make them where you could pull the temperature gauge for the grill out and then stick it into the meat.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
But this thing, yeah, a nice little app and didn't cost that much on the internet. And it works fantastic. But
Something to think about.
But I won't be grilling today. I'm going to let others do the work out.
Let them do the
work today.
And enjoy the warm weather.
Yes, enjoy the warm weather. Would have been nice if we could have gotten a Cubs win yesterday in Milwaukee. these games were killing me.
I like Sam's phrase in the sports, the thriller Ed Miller.
Three games in a row, extra innings.
Yeah, it's like playoff style, you know? And
playoffs from last year.
Well, but I mean, just you never know what's going to happen. And seeing the save blown twice yesterday was kind of heart-wrenching.
Well, blown save in the ninth and then the loss in the tenth.
Yes. Not,
you didn't blow it twice.
Blew the lead twice.
Right, but you wouldn't blow
two saves. Right, yes, yes.
Yeah. First save he's blown all year, too. First one since August of 2016 for Wade Davis.
And let's face it, Wade's had a great season, and if you're going to do it, I guess get it out of your system now kind of thing. So we've got the magic number down to four for that. And it's kind of funny because that magic number is the actual goal for the Bears this year in victories. I mean,
good luck.
Yeah. No kidding. And a lot of Pittsburgh folks in town too. So obviously, they knew there was an easy ticket to get in Chicago.
I was getting harassed yesterday, both in the sports office on the phone and on the text line, because I was saying all morning the magic number was five, which it was.
At the time.
It was five all morning yesterday, because what happened was, on Friday, the magic number against Milwaukee was six.
Right.
And the Cubs beat Milwaukee, so the magic number was four against the Brewers. A combination of Cubs wins, Brewers losses was four, and then the Brewers are out. Issue is, the Cardinals had leaped the Brewers in the standings.
Correct.
And these people are arguing with me all morning. Magic number's four, idiot. Like, no, it's five.
Right.
Technically, it's five. I think I should know this. And, of course, the magic number is now four, even though the Cubs lost yesterday.
Because the
Cardinals lost.
Correct.
So the magic number is four against both the Brewers and the Cardinals. There's your math lesson, Rick.
I don't need the math lesson.
Well, some people do.
Well, if anybody wants to take it up, we will feel free to give us a call, and we'll send all the calls to you.
Okay, do that.
All right.
Yes, I need that again today.
Because you sound
that kind of harassment, right?
Well, speaking of harassment, how about our president this morning already? Back on the Twitter. Of course, this all stemming from the Friday campaign rally for his candidate for U.S. Senate, Luther Strange, who is facing strong opposition by Judge Roy Moore, who's backed by Steve Bannon and those forces. But, of course, we're, down there and talking about issues like important issues of the day, like referring to football players that don't stand for the national anthem as SOBs that ought to be fired. And he had an interesting statement being put out by Roger Goodell, the commissioner, saying remarks were divisive. Divisive comments like these demonstrate an unfortunate lack of respect for the NFL, our great game, and all of our players. Goodell's statement never mentioned Donald Trump. Just generically divisive statements. Thought that was interesting.
Did you see what Kaepernick's mom tweeted?
I did not.
Guess that makes me a proud bleep.
Yep, there you go.
A proud bleep?
Yes. Well, and so we have the president yesterday saying Roger Goodell of NFL just put out a statement trying to justify the total disrespect certain players show to our country. Tell them to stand. Then this morning at 5:44 a.m. Central Daylight Time, if NFL fans refuse to go to games until players stop disrespecting our flag and country, you will see change take place fast, fire or suspend. And that followed by NFL attendance and ratings are way down. Boring games, yes, but many stay away because they love our country. League should back U.S. So you have this kind of interesting game playing going on there. You have the president disinviting the Golden State Warriors to the White House because Steph Curry said he wasn't going to go, and that earning all kinds of responses from NBA players and retired NBA players. And you have this kind of game going on where you have the president seeing that his candidate for the U.S. Senate down south is probably very much in jeopardy of losing, trying to stir up the base, trying to appeal to NASCAR sensibilities, and, you know, in the process, raising the issue of further divisions within the country. And we've seen actually a number of owners, team owners in the NFL responding, the Golden State Warriors responding, saying they're going to still go ahead of the nation's capital, but do things that celebrate diversity and equality while not attending the White House. And all of this, you have to wonder, just doesn't it seem in some respects like here's a bright, shiny object to look over here and don't look at some of these other more significant issues like the efforts by Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare and the issues there apparently falling short of the votes there, the issues of mounting tensions with North Korea. I mean, when you look at some of the even the issues involving ballistic testing, Iran also testing missiles. There's all that going on, and right now our president this morning is focused on the issues of whether you like it or not. And I'm not, you know, if you, I don't like the fact that people that are they're kneeling during the national anthem.
Does he really think this will make them stop kneeling?
No, in fact,
if anything, it will make it more common, right?
Well, and I think that's one thing that's going to be interesting to watch.
Who knows what happens today? I wouldn't be surprised if you have some like whole teams kneeling.
Yeah, and Nebraska Senator, Republican Senator Ben Sasse said that actually tweeted out this morning encouraging players not to kneel, but only for the reason that you're doing is giving the president what he wants, which I thought was kind of an interesting response from a Republican senator, although one not known to be very close to the president. So, you know, very, very interesting times here. And, yeah, I think let's all watch our football and whatever, but I'd be watching what's going on over in the North Korean sector right now and some of the things that are going on in the Middle East as well. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Time for our weekly spin through national politics. There's a new Washington Post ABC poll that's out. Post ABC poll found 37% of adults trust the president either a great deal or a good amount to responsibly handle the situation with North Korea, 37%, while 42% trust the commander-in-chief, quote, not at all. By comparison, 72% trust U.S. military leaders, including 43% saying they trust them a great deal. Overall, the president's job approval, 39%, 39%, 57% disapprove. It seems to be that that may be a stabilizing, however. It slipped to 36% in July. The shift is within the ABC Washington Post poll's margin of sampling error. Still more Americans strongly disapprove of his job of performance, 48%, than approve of it either strongly or somewhat. So those are the president's numbers. Let's go back more about this North Korea stuff. I mean, we had the president addressing the United Nations General Assembly last week where he issued a stark warning to Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea.
Now North Korea's reckless pursuit of nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles threatens the entire world with unthinkable loss of human life. It is an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a regime, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world with nuclear conflict. No nation on earth has an interest in seeing this band of criminals arm itself with nuclear weapons and missiles. The United States has great strength and patience. But if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
That's President Trump referring to Kim Jong-un as Rocket Man. The president followed that up with a new round of sanctions against North Korea and an announcement that the Central Bank of China has told its satellite banks not to do business with North Korea.
Our new executive order will cut off sources of revenue that fund North Korea's efforts to develop the deadliest weapons known to humankind. The order enhances the Treasury Department's authorities to target any individual or entity that conducts significant trade in goods, services, or technology with North Korea. And I'm very proud to tell you that, as you may have just heard moments ago, China, their central bank, has told their other banks, it's a massive banking system, to immediately stop doing business with North Korea.
Now, of course, by the end of last week, we were hearing reports about Arizona Senator John McCain saying that he was not going to support efforts by South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, his good friend, and other Republicans on their latest plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. Here's what Illinois' junior Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth had to say to Springfield TV station WICS.
Well, the timing is absolutely critical to fight this Trump care bill. This is basically Trump care 2.0. It's even worse than before because it's going to cut even more folks off from health care. Many states are going to lose tremendous amounts of money through the Medicaid program, and it's a real scramble. It's so important that the American Medical Association has actually come out against it already. And the fight will be all through this weekend and into the early part of next week.
That's Illinois Junior Senator Tammy Duckworth. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead in your Sunday Spin today, we'll be speaking with Mike Galatka, past president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, along with Ivan Fernandez, who's their new and first executive director of the association. We'll also be speaking to Brad Cole, executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. The Muni League is having its annual conference in Chicago this week, and we'll be talking about the concerns of cities and villages. And then we'll be speaking to Tom Bowen, Democratic consultant, principal of New Chicago Consulting, and a senior advisor at Max Strategies Group. We'll be talking about what's going on in Democratic politics, as well as the truly the new race for the Attorney General now that Lisa Madigan has decided not to seek re-election.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the end-of-week issues involving Republican attempts, Lindsey Graham's bill to repeal and replace Obamacare with a kind of a block grant plan for the states, and concerns that it could remove some of the existing protections that exist for pre-existing conditions, some basic health care rights, a lot of opposition from health care groups. With John McCain saying no, it looks like Rand Paul is a no. Question about Lisa Murkowski of Alaska being a no. But still, if this is something that Lindsey Graham wants to push, you know there are going to be a lot of lobbying still going on. Now, earlier in the week, last week, Lindsey Graham sounded optimistic, and he defended the Republican-only strategy, and that's, of course, something that even John McCain opposed. But Graham said that all the Democrats really wanted to do was just prop up Obamacare.
We have between now and the end of the month to have a vote and a debate about whether this is better than the status quo. My friends on the other side are never going to agree to a bipartisan proposal that does anything other than prop up Obamacare. I've talked to the president five times in the last 2 days. He is focused like a laser. He has told me he's not going to throw good money after bad. He's very excited about this state-centric healthcare system. And all I can tell you is that the process left to us is that the Democratic Party is never going to give us anything that fundamentally changes Obamacare. We've had weeks of talking, and the only time they've gotten serious is when they're afraid that my bill may pass.
Now, President Trump was an enthusiastic supporter of the Republican measure, and everybody knows his desire to scrap Obamacare, despite those concerns over coverage of pre-existing conditions and basic health care.
I think it has a very good chance. Obamacare is a disaster. It's failing badly. You look at the rates, you look at what's happening with premiums for people that can't afford Obamacare. It's been a catastrophic situation. I believe that Graham Cassidy really will do it the right way, and it is doing it the right way. It has tremendous support from Republicans.
And that was the president speaking earlier last week about those efforts. We'll have to see when everybody gets back to D.C. whether indeed there still will be that continued push by Republicans and whether they can actually get the votes by the end of the month under reconciliation rules. If they don't act, any other future changes would require 60 votes, which, of course, Republicans do not have that kind of majority to overcome a filibuster in the United States Senate. So all things to watch for in the coming week. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue on this warm and muggy September morning is Mike Galatka. He's past president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, and Ivan Fernandez, who's their new executive director. And gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me here.
Thanks, Rick.
So I was kind of surprised when I saw this that it's been 5 years that gaming terminals have been liberalized and legalized in the state, and it did get off to a slow start, and part of the revenue was to support the state's last capital construction bill, and there were concerns then about, you know, is this ever going to get off the ground? But it's gotten off the ground.
I think it's taken a little while, but I think that to give credit to the regulators, they didn't allow it to take off real quickly. They made sure that everybody involved were the right people to be involved, and they've allowed it to roll out in a manner that was controllable. And I think what we find is we're getting to that, to the point where we're full out in all the municipalities that are opted in. And I think it's been a great thing. I mean, it's been 5 years. It's been a lot of work and that. But I think at this pace, we've contributed over $1 billion to state and local governments, and more than that to over 6,000 small businesses throughout the state.
And, you know, Ivan, this is also not just meant to be a state or local revenue resource, but it is a way to help some of these small businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the narrative that we hear over and over again is that without this, many small businesses would have gone under a long time ago, and that this came online at the perfect time to save those businesses and create a revenue stream that they can count on to keep their doors open and their employees employed.
Well, and I think what helped finally get this legislatively, because it took a long while for it to pass, and quite frankly, if it wasn't for the Capitol bill idea and the public works component of it, you know, that's probably what helped move this forward. But, you know, when you look at you look at how it has grown, and of that $1 billion, I mean, how does that break state versus local as far as the revenue sources?
Well, the way that the industry is structured, one-sixth of all tax revenue goes back to the local municipality, and then 5/6 or 25% of the 30% that the state receives goes to the state for the capital projects and such, as you said.
And local governments are taking, taking advantage of it, but it's a new revenue source for them as well.
Absolutely. They've as we saw at the very beginning, where people weren't familiar with what was going to happen, there was a lot of communities that opted out. And at the beginning in September of 2012, there was only 13 communities that were involved in the initial rollout. And as of August of last August, this past month, there was 970 communities that have opted in and have taken advantage of this tax. And the good thing about the amount that goes to them, it's not earmarked for any particular purpose. They can take that money and use it for whatever local source resources they need to fulfill.
Well, and I know, like, the community of Oakwood, I don't even know where that is. Actually, I thought I knew where it was in the state, and I don't. But, like, they're using it for college scholarships for residents.
Yeah,
which...
we've been at the Municipal League Convention that you'll be talking to over the last couple of days, and it was real exciting to hear from leaders of different towns throughout the state of what are you using the money for? Like, I spoke to somebody from Lockport. All of their video gaming money goes into a fund in order to do improvements to their downtown area. They've used the money to generate grants and things like that. I mean, Crestwood's park districts, I mean, between police pensions, general fund, I mean, they use it where they need it. And a lot of towns take it serious and say, you know, we want to use this for something that's either going to better the town or socially, culturally, and that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's been real exciting.
And I get the sense, too, that for the most part they're knowledgeable enough that they look at it not as a necessarily, I don't want to say unreliable, but just that it's not one that you rely on for basic operational costs kind of things.
Yeah, we did hear from some communities that were very very clear about the fact that they do not include this money in their budgets.
In their general operating budgets.
Exactly, correct.
And so, I mean, you've got Rockford, they use it for their vehicle fleet. Wilmington was, they use the money to replace a vehicle sticker tax. I mean, I guess, too, you know, given the pressure that these municipalities are under, especially when everybody's talking about property taxes and things like that, to have a non-property tax source of revenue provide some easing for them on a number of things.
I can't recall the name of the community because I was there for two full days, so I spoke to a lot of people. But I remember one that stood out was the fact that they're paying for all their youth sports programs with the money that's generated and contributed, so that the residents that want to play in the youth sports programs do not have to reach into their own pockets and pay for those programs. It's being paid for through this money, which I thought was great.
It's very interesting to see how this has evolved. I mean, you know, from nobody knowing what to expect out of it, and you know, $1 billion in 5 years is nothing to shake a stick at.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the power of video gaming also, is that in the past, riverboat casinos, although they are great destination places and have done wonderful things for those towns, there's 10 of them in, you know, 8 or 9 communities. And video gaming has gone from allowed that money to trickle down to, you know, over a thousand communities throughout the state, in creating an entertainment option for small towns in that people can stay local and spend their money local versus having to go to the next biggest town or even to a larger town that doesn't have gaming. You know, it's an entertainment option for them to stay local, and I think that's been great.
We're speaking with Mike Galatka. He's past president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, and Ivan Fernandez, who is their executive director. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, speaking with Mike Galatka, past president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, and their executive director of the association, Ivan Fernandez. We're talking about 5 years of video gaming in Illinois. And, of course, one of the things we've talked about in the past, Mike, is the issue of Chicago having opted out and the potential revenues that the city could see if it were to be allowed. And at a time when the city has been under increased pressure of raising property taxes for different things, if this wouldn't be a viable option. You, of course, say it absolutely should be.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for the mayor, when in his mind there's an option for the city of Chicago to own a casino and not just kind of get their part of a piece of an existing casino, that's his first and foremost thought, is get me a casino downtown that I can own that will pay a lot of bills. But what we've kind of tried to push aside from that idea is that there are neighborhoods in the city that that casino would not be necessarily meant for. That's meant to bring outside money in, the conventioners, the people who are here for tourism. And aside from that, video gaming, we believe, would generate probably $200 to $250 million in the city of Chicago. And I mean, if you take a look at that number, that's a huge amount of money that the state, if you just look at the state's portion, that they could use to put back into the city, because the city's asking for a lot. And if you look at some of the numbers that have come out as far as the full-out riverboat expansion that they've talked about, that's more money than the state would get on an annual basis for full extension of riverboats, because each venue would kind of would pull from all of the existing venues and stuff. So the city of Chicago would be huge, I think, for the state. I think we could generate a lot of money. You know, I've said it at times, you know, for the police issues, you know, even some of the taxes that the city has had to take on now with utilities and garbage and stuff like that. I think we'd be able to cover all that.
Yeah. Has there been, and is there still continue to be pushback from the casinos?
I mean, there is, but I think they've accepted
what the landscape is.
Yeah, I mean, because
as it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point they've accepted that video gaming exists. That to them it takes from them. I think that it's hurt the riverboats less than what may be perceived, because if you look across the Midwest, riverboat and destination gaming is down or stable at the minimum. But with video gaming, Illinois is the one state that has actually grown in its revenue. Video gaming has grown the pie, which is what's been so successful to me about the proposition, is that you have small businesses making money, and the state is actually growing gaming revenue, whereas other states in the Midwest, even across the country, Las Vegas, Nevada, they grow at 1% a year. We've grown 59% in revenue, the revenue to the state, from 2012 to today.
I wanted to ask you about the issue of problem gaming, because that was a big issue with when casino gambling was legalized. And, now with more availability of gaming, there's also becomes more concern about problem gambling. How do you guys deal with that?
Well, I think over the last 5 years, we've tried to, once we've built it, we've tried to mature as an industry and look out for those kinds of people. What we did a few months ago, or the beginning of the year, is that we have been funding enhanced services to the state's 1-800 gambler line, a hotline right now for problem gambling. If you have questions, worries, you want to talk to a counselor, is 1-800-GAMBLER. And what we've done is we've added to the tools that they now have. You can get hold of those same people by text in a world where people may be more likely to reach out by text, because it's not as personal as a phone call. You can text ILGAMB, like Illinois Gambling, ILGAMB to 53342. That will get you to a counselor. Or you can go to the illinoisalliance.org, and that's a group of counselors and responsible gambling advocates and the industry working together. And there you can actually go online and chat online with a counselor. And there's a couple other tools that we're paying for. But the point is that we're trying to reach out and provide as many tools as possible for those players, so that at the time, if they do feel weak and they feel like they want to change, that it's right in front of them, that there's a lot of different tools for them to use. And we're also trying to push for certification and further education of waitresses and waiters, make it as part of the Bassett training. And Bassett training is now required throughout the state. So that will put tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people on the ground that have at least some kind of training as to how to spot it, how to react to it, what tools are out there. And I think that's what we're trying to do to push all the opportunities to prevent, problem gambling and help promote responsible gambling.
In this 5-year kind of review of what's going on, and when we talked about this a little bit off air about illegal, unregulated gaming machines. And I was kind of curious about this because, I mean, that was kind of one of the sales points of having video gambling, was because it existed and it was not regulated. And, you know, the thought being in part that if there's going to be gaming, then it ought to be regulated, then it ought to be, you know, the state should get a take of it. I mean, and yet there's still video gambling that's going on out there, and it's not part of the regulated system.
Unfortunately, there is. They've created a loophole, and they've used kind of the laws that McDonald's uses for the Monopoly game and that. And
so like a contest type
game. Yeah, like it's sweepstakes is what it's called. And you're seeing it a lot in the city of Chicago because the city of Chicago has opted out, and these bar owners and that are looking for some kind of an option. So they're going to that people. And these are people who are unregulated. These are people who are unregulatable. The people who are putting these sweepstakes machines out, if we're trying to get rid of organized crime, that's where organized crime is in these kinds of machines. And so you're seeing it either in places that have opted out, like the city of Chicago, or you're seeing it at locations that can't get regulated by the Illinois Gaming Board, that they wouldn't be passed to be a location licensee. They wouldn't qualify. And so they're using this as their option to compete, and the state sees none of the money. And so we're trying to get Springfield to see an obvious thing that needs to be corrected. You know, if we're all going to go through a regulated system, why allow something out there that isn't?
And is nothing moving because it's Springfield, or is it?
I mean, it's hard to really say. The difficulty is sometimes even
what's your priority isn't necessarily their priority.
Or no, I think that I mean we've had Leader Durkin like say, "Man, that's crazy." But I think sometimes with gaming gets thrown into a pile, and even sometimes things that are obvious little fixes get thrown into the big pile, and when the big pile gets real heavy, then it just
falls
goes
through
nowhere.
It falls through the floor. Yes.
So I mean, that's I guess why we just need to push it as a separate subject. The Chicago Crime Commission had come out in the past and discussed this and tried to push for it, and you know, in years just get away from themselves, and you know, we got to start over. But we really think it's something that needs to be addressed, and it's an easy fix.
Easier said than done when it comes to Springfield. Right. Mike Galatka, past president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, and Ivan Fernandez, the executive director, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be back with more right after this.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome to the second hour of your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase studio in Tribune Tower on sunny North Michigan Avenue this morning. Joining me here in studio is Brad Cole. He's the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, and the Muni League just had their annual conference wrapped up in Chicago. And how many thousands?
A couple of thousand people. Good morning. Thanks for having me on. We had our 104th annual conference. I think half of those 104 years we've had it to the Hilton Chicago, for real, continuously. And we just wrapped up a good year with President Karen Darch, who's the village president of Barrington. She's just concluded her year as president of the league, and we're getting ready to start off a year with Mayor Mark Eckert from Belleville. So we had a couple of thousand local elected officials talking about important issues and get together and learning, studying topics, trying to advance issues. So it was a good week.
Well, no doubt, as a mayor, former mayor of Carbondale, having a fellow downstater in charge of the league.
It's
interesting
nice.
Dynamics.
Yeah, it's nice. And we rotate. So every year there's somebody from a different region. This year it was up north, which Lake County. Next year it'll be down south. And then the following year it will be Mayor Mike Inman from Macomb, from Central Illinois.
Yes, know him very well. Yeah. Yes. Very, very good. I mentioned to Brad that I picked up some intelligence of what was going on over there, at the discussions going on over there. And one of the things, and naturally I thought of this too, is the issue of how, as part of the budget that was enacted, sales tax rebating back to local communities, that the state has now decided to apply a, as I call it, a shipping and handling fee, where they get a cut.
Right.
And this isn't going over so well with a lot of the local municipalities.
No. Anybody that has a locally imposed sales tax is not happy about this. So the state legislature decided to charge a 2% fee for collecting and dispersing back those funds. They're already collecting them. The retailers are sending them in, and the money is...
It's how the state gets its share.
That's how the state gets its share. And then the funds are distributed back to municipalities along with the state share. So there's nothing that's happening that's any extra with the locally imposed taxes. But the General Assembly adopted a 2% fee service charge on that. And so it's going to impact people's budgets right now. I mean, and that's really where the big issue comes in, is that the General Assembly will do something midstream for the municipality.
After budgets are already adopted.
Right. And of course, the municipalities have balanced budgets. They adopt them every year on time. And so that's where the angst is coming from, is this is an after-the-fact issue. We're already working with some legislators, and Representative Anthony DeLuca, who's the chairman of the House Cities and Villages and Committee, is wanting to sponsor legislation to address that. So maybe we can tweak it a little bit, maybe reduce the fee. But that's one of those issues. It's essentially another unfunded mandate. It's not the typical one that costs us money that we have to go do something. It's now just money they're taking. So,
well, better they didn't go after the local share of the state income tax, which was on the table for quite some time.
They took 10% one year.
One year.
Yeah,
correct.
So that's true. And that is an issue. A lot of people don't understand that. The local share of the income tax was a part of the income tax.
The original income tax.
Absolutely. So if you believe that the state income tax is legitimate, you may think it's too high or low. But if you think it's legitimate, you can't alter the local share, because it was part of the genesis of the issue altogether when those local communities were disallowed from collecting anything themselves, which they had done prior to 1969, many of them did. So the local share got a 10% cut this year. It's a 1 year only, and we're going to try to make sure that that's the case, it doesn't continue.
Now, with sales taxes, while you say it's 2%, right, but that, which doesn't sound like much to,
right,
you know, but it can, depending on the location and, you know, how retail based they are, it can have a significant impact.
Well, it's thousands of dollars in a small town, and it's hundreds of thousands of dollars in a bigger community. Go to Schaumburg or Bolingbrook, see the impact it's going to have on them. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Go to a small rural community, and they don't have a lot of cash laying around. So when you take $1,000 out of their wallet, that's one or two streets that they can't oil and chip. It's real money that's affecting real services. And the issue is, for us at the Illinois Municipal League, is that it just came out of nowhere. It just kind of over the fence, little present at the last minute.
What about, too, as far as just overall sales tax collections, you know, as we go through this transformation and, you know, everybody talks about Amazon second headquarters, but I mean, just about the fact of brick and mortar versus online, and we go through that transformation.
Yeah. Well, and of course, two parts of that. We're working with the federal government to try to enact the sales tax on those charges, internet sales, marketplace fairness, and Congressman Hultgren has instituted or organized a municipal finance caucus that deals with that and some other local issues. So you have the sales tax collection on internet sales, but when you look at sales tax in general, sales taxes are down. Income taxes are down. Why is that? With the out-migration of people and with the economic uncertainty, people are spending less. So when the people are spending less, or there's fewer people to spend money, there's less money to collect on taxes. And it's this vicious cycle. We talk about property tax freeze, very popular, obviously. But as the value of property goes down and people are selling and people are moving, then there's fewer people paying property tax. So what do you have to do when there's lower sales tax income? People, you know, you got to either increase your revenue or decrease your expenditures. So it has kind of an opposite effect when some of these things are implemented. It almost forces local governments to increase taxes because they have to still pay for the public safety and the public works and infrastructure, all things that are important.
We're speaking with Brad Cole. He's executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio with Brad Cole. He's the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, the Muni League just concluding its annual conference in Chicago. And before the break, we were talking about the issue of uncertainty and how that actually reflects itself in various tax issues. But I have to wonder, given what we've been through and the fact that we actually do have an enacted state budget, has to be at least providing some kind of certainty for local officials.
Yes, and mayors and trustees throughout the state wanted something to get done. And so the certainty and uncertainty, as it were, is a very important issue, because as mayors are going around trying to increase their economic development activity, they're trying to attract small businesses and support local activities and nonprofits. All of those things were so impacted by the fact that we didn't have a budget. So this was very important, and we're very glad to have that behind us, and we're looking forward to trying to be on track next year.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, so it definitely is helpful that we got that behind us.
But one of the things left unresolved, as it were, and particularly as far as where the governor comes from, is the issue of trying to do something about property taxes.
Property taxes are an issue, and we see that. We recognize it. Of course, the municipal share of property taxes is anywhere from maybe 6 to 10% of your bill. The majority goes to schools and education. And so a lot of the other taxing entities, like municipalities, get lumped into that issue. And the issue for us is that a lot of those property tax dollars go straight into paying for pensions, public safety employee pensions. You know, we're working on issues trying to promote the consolidation of those funds so we can save some money and actually put more money into the fund to pay the pensioners. And you and I have been talking about that for as long as you and I have been talking. And so property tax is important, and the freeze is understandable. The one thing to point out to your listeners is that a property tax freeze really is more talk than action, because there's so many different factors that impact your tax bill that even if there's a freeze, the likelihood is that your taxes are going to go up if the property, the equalized assessed value goes down. It all applies to the rate, you know, your equalizer, all these different things. And I've seen it where taxing bodies have lowered their taxes or not raised them, their own self-imposed freezes, and people's bills went up. My bill went up in Carbondale this year 15%. There weren't that many great increases on the rates, but because there's so many homes selling, people moving, of course, the impact on public university towns.
I was just going to say SIU and the state budget factors there.
Yeah, so you know the equalized assessed valuation of the whole community goes down, the same rate applies, and people's taxes go up. So it's a tricky issue, because if people expect that their taxes aren't going to go up after a freeze, that's not entirely the case.
Now, one other thing that I heard that was being discussed at this convention was the issue of fire departments. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously, as we've talked about, the issue of pension debt, mm-hmm. but also in an overall sense about how are fire departments a victim of their own success?
Well, of course, the professional fire department has grown. So over the last 50 years, I mean, you went from a lot of volunteer departments to really professional firefighting. And firefighters, police officers, public works personnel, everybody that works for a city is an important part of the municipality. Firefighters have increased their training. There's now minimum manning that adds additional costs. But we're seeing where it has shifted. And, of course, look at building codes. More communities have building codes, so places are being built more safely.
Sprinkler codes,
all of that. So there are fewer fires now. The majority in many places are EMS calls, so medical calls for ambulance or paramedics. So there are fewer fire calls and fewer fires. And the costs are going up, though. So we're seeing an imbalance, a disparity between the costs and what the services are that are being provided. And with the additional impact of minimum manning requirements in many cases, where cities have to staff up to meet a level, maybe based on equipment, maybe based on previous records, or maybe arbitration, whatever, the costs are getting to be insurmountable when actual fires are going down. And that's what you want.
Well, that's what I mean about being a victim of, right. of success. But you look at, you know, a fire department like the police, like it's a part of what you expect from government, and in many respects, like it's almost like an insurance policy.
It is, yeah. It's a secondary insurance policy to make sure that you know that your home, your business, your valuables, your family, people are protected, and that's where we get into this issue of the public safety pension costs. You know, so as you see, departments not as active in firefighting, more maybe in EMS calls in some places where they're not split, the public safety pension costs are just going through the roof. And we know the state is billions of dollars behind, and many municipalities have not been able to keep up because of the increasing costs and benefits that are being provided by the General Assembly. So we're looking, and this was an issue that Mayor Daartch and I know Mayor Eckert support going forward, is trying to consolidate those funds. We have 663 individual downstate funds for police and fire. And how can we achieve some economies of scale by investing those funds together, putting them together for management purposes? How can we put more money, at least the same amount of money, into that aspect of it, but actually put the money into the fund so the pensioners get the benefit versus the fund managers? And that's how we have to take a look at all of these issues in a different light nowadays.
Is there turf battles that prevent that kind of consolidation?
Oh, well, when you have 663 funds, you have 663 fund managers and investors and local boards. And then there's the training that's required by the local boards, for the local boards, that was an unfunded mandate. And so there's a cottage industry that provides the fund or the training. But the cities are the ones funding all this. And how are they funding it? They're funding it from their taxpayers. And so those are the costs that continue to go up and up and up. And so, yeah, there's some turf out there. And I think I've said before that at some point we might get to the place where there's two people at City Hall. There's the clerk who writes the check and the mayor who signs it, and all the money goes to the pension fund. And there's nothing else.
And that's one of the things. And I don't know where this leads to because of where we see where the pension laws are in this state.
So these are some of the things we talk about at our conference and our meetings, and we're always trying to protect and promote the interests of the community, which includes those employees. It includes the public safety employees, and it primarily is to serve the health, safety, and welfare of our citizens.
That's Brad Cole. He's the executive director of the Illinois Municipal League. Brad, as always, thanks so much for joining me.
Absolutely.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with Tom Bowen. He's the Democratic Consultant Principal of New Chicago Consulting and Senior Advisor to the MAC Strategies Group. We'll be talking about now that Lisa Madigan has decided not to seek a fifth term as Attorney General. We'll be looking at the mad scramble among Democrats looking to try to succeed her and apparently face the lone Republican that's announced for it, Erica Harold from Urbana.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. We were talking earlier in the show about, you know, the uncertainty over where Republicans are going with their effort to repeal and replace Obamacare, apparently short of the votes, John McCain voicing his opposition. The UN, of course, was in New York last week, and that's where the General Assembly, and that's where Donald Trump spoke. But also in New York, speaking of the Gates Foundation, was former President Barack Obama. And he said he was getting a little frustrated by the Republicans' continued repeal efforts of his signature law.
And all of this being done without any demonstrable economic or actuarial or plain common sense rationale, it frustrates. And it's certainly frustrating to have to mobilize every couple of months to keep our leaders from inflicting real human suffering on our constituents. But, you know, typically that's how progress is won and how progress is maintained. On every issue, we have to stand up for each other, recognize that progress is never inevitable, that it often can be fragile. It's in need of constant renewal. And our individual progress and our collective progress depends on our willingness to roll up our sleeves and work.
Now, also in New York, while at the United Nations, President Trump praised French President Emmanuel Macron and the Bastille Day military parade hosted by that nation. In fact, President Trump said he was so inspired with it, he may do the same in the United States.
So we're actually thinking about 4th of July, Pennsylvania Avenue, having a really great parade to show our military strength. You know, we're spending this year $700 billion, more than we've ever spent on the military. And which is a good thing to do because we're friends. We're looking forward to doing that. I'm speaking with General Kelly and with all of the people involved, and we'll see if we can do it this year, but we certainly will be beginning to do that.
So there you go, a military parade on Pennsylvania Avenue on July 4th. We'll see what happens. Well, joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase studio is Thomas Bowen. He's Democratic consultant, a principal of New Chicago Consulting, and senior advisor to Max Strategies Group. Tom, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Good morning.
So we talked a week ago after Lisa Madigan made that stunning announcement that she was not going to seek re-election after already having petitions out and had sent a surrogate over to the Cook County Democratic slating and getting their formal endorsement. And so we get that decision. And, yeah, it was great. We wanted to talk, but also wanted this to percolate a little bit, too,
right,
because it was a lot of maybes. And there's still a lot of maybes out there, but we also have some no's, for example.
Yeah.
Notably, Tom Dart, who I will be interviewing out at Aurora University, is part of their Town Square series on Tuesday night over at Creamy Auditorium at 7:30. That's my little pitch there. But Dart's name always would seem to be, you know, coming from the
one of the true 800-pound gorillas in a race like that. I would say Tom Dart and Kim Fox would both be formidable candidates, and both have said no.
And we have two, I guess, real announced candidates, as
right,
it were. State Senator Kwame Raoul has announced, as well as we saw the shift from the governor campaign of
from Rep. Scott Drury, yeah,
from Scott Drury to the,
and they're significant candidates. I mean, I think there's a difference between people that scare the field, you know, almost cleared, like Dart and like Fox, and then, you know, candidates that have very little recognition, name ID, have to prove themselves to the voters, and obviously a very large town like Chicago. Cook County, also, you know, one of the largest counties in the country, and then the entire rest of the state of Illinois. This is a very difficult race because there is so much going on in Democratic primary politics in Illinois right now. It's a very substantial governor's race. And those two candidates are just the first two. I would
right,
expect, you know, several more to sort of test the waters, so to say, and there are furious calls going on behind the scenes right now among folks like myself and, you know, the other elected officials, because as you stated, the petition period is open. And if you've had to get on the ballot as a, you know, state senator or a state rep, that is a much different challenge. Or if you've never run for office before, than getting on the ballot as a statewide candidate where, you know, there's a very specific number of signatures you have to turn in.
5,000 is the minimum, and you turn in 10,000 just to make sure you're covered.
And it is. That's actually a tricky way to do it because not allowing extra volume, which they changed the law several
right,
years back, it actually makes you have to go through what we call striking process, which is if you are not a registered voter or if you, you know, didn't live in the state of Illinois, for example, you can be struck off the petition so that your signature is not counted towards, you know, that.
Yeah, you have to significantly vet those signatures.
Exactly, and that's a lot of work.
And it takes time.
And an organization.
And now the filing period ends, I think, December 4th.
Yeah.
But still, it's not just that simple. I mean, it does take an organization. And
the organizations don't, in my opinion, have a large incentive to go one way or the other. You know, look, in Democratic Party politics or Republican Party politics, you want to be with the winner. Or you want to, you know, be with somebody that's going to get you something in the future. And in a very uncertain time, the answer is, well, let's wait and let's have them prove themselves.
Right. Let's see how the field develops here.
Exactly.
Too. I mean, because I think And it was kind of interesting because this was right before, I think, that Lisa Madigan made her decision. But the Democratic Attorney General's Association was making a very concerted push for more women to be running for that office and using that as a stepping stone.
Attorney General is a very common stepping stone to, you know, governor's races, U.S. Senate races, and just general. They are the very well-known leaders in their states because the nature of the office is essentially, you know, the state's chief lawyer. So if, you know, a Wall Street bank or a, you know, scam artist organization or, you know, a out-of-control president, this is your chief legal advocate in the state of Illinois. And I think the attorney general had always been popular for a reason. It's because the nature of the office, Lisa Madigan was always popular because the nature of the office allows you to be. So it's a very, it's a great position to run from for other office, but it's also a great job. And I think that's why we saw her, you know, spend four terms doing it. It was actually a little unusual that we did not see her step up compared to how other states operate.
Well, and of course, with the fact of her father being House Speaker Michael Madigan, and I found it kind of interesting that the Republican camp was saying that, well, that was a reflection of their basically tarnishing Mike Madigan. And as I've said, there, if there's a significant Republican accomplishment since Runner's been governor, it's been the tarnishing of Mike Madigan.
It only costs, what, $65, $75 million? I'm sure nothing else productive could have been done with that money.
But I don't know that I necessarily would buy the argument that, while I believe she probably would have, some of that tarnish would have rubbed off on her. I still think there was enough independent insulation that existed from her own record.
Look, voters judge candidates based on who they are and what they have done. And there's a lot of bank shot process stuff that keeps all of us busy in our day-to-day jobs, and they just don't really see a lot of it. I think the argument of, you know, what the speaker has done in politics and might do in the future is relevant for her to discuss in the same way that Erica Harold is going to have to discuss what Donald Trump has done and will do in the future.
Don't go there. I want to come back and talk more about that. Because
voters really do judge you on your own record, and I think the attorney general was a strong office holder and candidate for the future. And in this day and age, you know, the women are more active today than they have been in previous political cycles. We're seeing it in the number of candidates who are running nationwide. We're seeing it in where donations are made. Those levels have ticked up. It is also the case for young people. You know, normally a midterm election, they're a little less participatory in the electoral process. It's pretty high right now. We're going to see what happens as we go forward. But it's a tremendous loss for Democrats in Illinois and women across the country to lose a major leader like Lisa Madigan. And I think that will shape some of what's going on in this race.
We're speaking with Democratic consultant Thomas Bowen. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. We're speaking with Tom Bowen. He's Democratic consultant, principal of New Chicago Consulting, senior advisor to Mac Strategies Group. And before the break, we were talking about the issue of Lisa Madigan's departure, not seeking re-election, I should say, for a fifth term as attorney general. And Tom, you touched on one of these issues of, you know, how we're kind of talking about candidates being tainted by others and reflection and that kind of thing. One of the things, and back when she was a candidate and really didn't make that big a deal about her running again, I think it was like in an offhand comment she made somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's the plan, I think, is what she said. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting in looking at the press releases coming out of the AG's office. And mm-hmm. a lot of them were tied to her joining with other attorneys general, largely Democratic attorneys general, on issues of filing front of the court briefs and those kinds of things, dealing with issues emanating from Donald Trump.
Right. Well, he dominates all politics all the time, and that's a fact of life, and people have to just recognize it. I think there's a tremendous opportunity in an example like New York, where the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is working with Bob Mueller to make sure that...
Bob Mueller being the special prosecutor, right.
To make sure that Donald Trump, using his pardon power, cannot affect state crimes, according to the Constitution. And Schneider and Mueller very smartly have teamed up in order to, sort of help his investigation. And look, all Democrats are doing is emulating what Republican attorney generals did when President Obama was in office, starting in 2010. God knows how many lawsuits they put forward.
Challenging executive authority. And
other just things Congress was doing. So the opportunity is now there for Democratic attorney generals. And Trump has a special, way of just permeating all parts of politics and, unfortunately, even sports, as we know from today. But I think what Lisa was doing is just reflecting that new reality. And that's going to be a part of this race. What the president is doing on immigration policies, for example, the travel ban. The Hawaii attorney general was the first one who moved on that. And I believe the Washington attorney general, Washington state attorney general, also joined in the court about how you're affecting our state. And look, that's something we don't commonly think about, how our state relationships are to our federal government. But there are certain powers enumerated to the states for reasons, and we're going to see, Democrats use them.
Well, and I think when you look at things like the Trust Act that was recently enacted and signed into law by the governor, but you have issues like, obviously that's an immigration issue, and we know how controversial that is.
Sure.
And, there's the issue in McHenry County of whether law enforcement is following the law or not in turning over detainees to ICE.
And we're going to also explore some brand new areas that I don't think we contemplated very much as we set up our systems. And I'll point out the Department of Homeland Security informed the state of Illinois that Russian, agents or whatnot penetrated or may have penetrated our electoral systems. I'm not sure if we have a statute on the book that says you can't collude with a foreign entity in state elections. I think that's going to be part of the debate going forward. And, the attorney general is your lawyer, right? As a citizen of the state of Illinois, that's your chief legal advocate. So whoever is going to court to fight for you, they are the ones deciding it. They are the ones shaping the whole process. And I think Democratic voters and Republican voters, on their side, if a primary did develop, but then all of us in the general election, we're all going to have some interesting discussions and decisions to make about who we want to be our chief legal advocate.
Well, and some of the bread and butter of that office was, consumer representative. And as you mentioned, home repair scams, credit monitoring, credit things. But it seems like, and I don't know if it's just kind of a nationalization of that office is occurring here.
It is. There's obviously some things going on, and specifically to those of I was going to say us. I don't live in Chicago anymore. I moved to Oak Park, unfortunately. Those folks who live in the city of Chicago who have concerns about police, treatment of citizens, and how the state attorney general can help the city of Chicago do that.
Well, and as we saw, Lisa Madigan was one of the first who asked for the Justice Department to come in.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor was opposed to that initially,
right,
but then agreed to that. But we still have kind of these unresolved issues about
Like Senator Raul will talk extensively about his work on some of those reforms. I think all of these are going to be a component of this race. And the thing that folks should remember, primaries are not a majority winner. It's a plurality. So if there are 6, 7, 8 people in the race, or if there's even 3 people in the race, 50% is not the number that wins. It's just whoever gets the most votes.
So how many people get in?
Well,
I won't go by names because I don't want to do names without knowing any, but I think it's going to be a big primary.
Absolutely. It is an opportunity for folks who've spent some time in the political system to kind of grow that next level. It's an opportunity for young folks in the political system to maybe take a big leap over others. And it's also an opportunity for, those folks who are part of kind of our, we'll call them political elite, to use a loose term, who have a connection to the legal world. We've seen a former ambassador to the Obama administration float his name. His name is Andy Shapiro, I believe. you know, who's an attorney. We're going to see some folks come outside the system who just have a connection to the legal world. And, you know, there'll also be just kind of random candidates that jump in that no one's ever heard of before, because one thing that's going through everybody's mind right now, whether you are a Democrat, Republican, man or woman, young or old, is the election of Donald Trump showed everybody that unconventional things can happen in the political system. And I believe it's caused a lot of folks to reevaluate. And why not me is much easier to sort of convince yourself to run for politics these days than it has been in the past.
Now, there is a bumper sticker. Why not me? Thomas Bowen, Democratic consultant, principal of New Chicago Consulting, and senior advisor for MAC Strategies Group. Tom, as always, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. That's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Mike Galatka and Ivan Fernandez from the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, Brad Cole from the Illinois Municipal League, and Democratic consultant Tom Bowen. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
Ooh, wow. Well, it's quiet week in politics this week.
No. Look at Trump today.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean,
being super sarcastic here.
5:45 this morning, he's tweeting about the NFL.
I'd like to see him sleep in a little bit.
We all would.
Get a little more rest.
We all would, I think. But I'm going to tune it out.
Really?
Today. I'm going to Taste of Chicago on steroids.
Oh, the Chicago Gourmet.
Indeed I am.
I'm going to be hosting a cooking demo at 3:30 today.
Are you?
Yeah, with Art Smith on the main stage.
On the main stage?
They have the main stage, so I'll be there at 3:30 today. If they can find when I finish the show at 1, I'm going to go over and, maybe nosh a little bit.
Oh, yes.
And then at 3:30, they'll get a wheelbarrow and take me over to the main stage.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to be kneeling, but it's going to be completely involuntary. It's going to be because I ate too much. Has nothing, no political ramifications whatsoever.
I am so looking forward to it. The only thing I'm not looking forward to it is I've never done Chicago Gourmet in 90-degree temperatures.
Yeah, usually it's a little cooler when this goes on.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting time.
This means you have to hydrate a little more. If you have to, you have to.
It's never been a problem at the Chicago Gourmet.
Have fun over there.
We'll see you over there.
See you over there later on.